Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Joining us on the line is Dagi Lasis. She was born in Latvia and forced to flee with her family to a displaced persons camp in Germany in 1944. 5 years later, her family, penniless, ended up in Indianapolis. Her memoir, The Wall Falls, A Woman Rises, shares her remarkable story of how a tech entrepreneur broke the glass ceiling and helped modernize Latvia. That person is Dagi herself. Welcome to the show, Dagi.
Thank you, Hannah. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's lovely to have you with us. And what an incredible story you have to tell. If we can start at the beginning, as it were, and your time as a child and having to leave your family home and your country. Do you remember much about that time?
Well, I was really an infant when we fled Latvia. But in Germany, I have a few memories in terms of these big buildings and being a little bit bored. And my first real memories are when we arrived in Indianapolis in 1950, and I was almost 7 years old. And I was quite impressed to see that our sponsor, and by the way, in those days, you had to have a sponsor from the displaced persons camp for families who came to the United States. And our sponsor was a Lutheran church in Indianapolis. So, yes, so I remember arriving and the minister's house, instead of the one room that we all lived in at the displaced persons camp in Germany, it was a building with a dining room, several bedrooms. And I thought to myself, why? There are only two people, you know, the minister and his wife, and they have this fantastic house. So that was really my first real memory of the arriving in the U.S. And then, of course, I went through the Indianapolis public school system. And in the beginning, I looked different. I had braids, long braids, and they put me in kindergarten, even though I had actually gone in the displaced persons camp through the third grade. So the memories were that I was definitely different. The chairs in the kindergarten were too small. The teacher brought in this bigger table from another classroom. Oh. Kids were looking at me. Teacher was writing red, blue, green. But that all changed in an instant. It seemed like an instant. I picked up English very quickly, and it just went on from there beautifully. I graduated from the high school called Arsenal Technical High School in Indianapolis, and I received a scholarship to the university in Indianapolis called Butler University, where I majored in chemistry and math. So, yeah, when I graduated, I was engaged to my husband, Andres, who's also a Latvian, and we decided each of us to work a year before getting married. So my husband had taken a job on the East Coast of the U.S., and I decided to stay, of course, in Indianapolis. And I asked my professor, where should I look for a job? I didn't like the chemistry labs, and I wanted to use my math skills. So he said, well, there are up-and-coming industries here called the computer industry, and there are two companies, IBM and Burroughs, here locally in Indianapolis. Why don't you try them? And also there are insurance companies here that look for mathematicians. So I applied to both, got offers for both, and what decided my whole career was $25. $25 a month was a difference that Burroughs gave me versus the insurance company. So that started everything. My love for computing, and soon Indianapolis branch transferred me to the headquarters in Detroit. Oh, and I forgot. I didn't realize that I was the first female programmer until my boss called me in and said, oh, Dagi, I'm so sorry to have to give you all these tests. He said, but you see, no other girl or woman has ever applied. So we had to call Detroit, the headquarters, to ask them, can we hire a girl programmer? And they apparently researched and they said, well, there's nothing in the rules against hiring a girl. So yeah, go ahead. Just give her a bunch of tests. So, but to me, I thought it was normal. But anyway, that's how I remember I was kind of the first one there. And actually, as my career went on, I was the only female among guys, but it didn't bother me, and I kind of accepted it. And the only reason was because at that time, this was before the women's movement really took off, so I was ahead of them, and I happened to be the only gal in all my positions as I moved up the ladder at the Burroughs Company. I was manager of scientific programming. I did develop a mathematical program, which was kind of an interesting story about being a female. This was like around 1970. I had finished a math optimization program that the oil companies really wanted because it gave them the cheapest oil blend from various ingredients that met certain criteria. So my boss called me and after I finished my program, and he said, how would you like to go to Japan to present this program? Because Mitsubishi Oil in Japan is looking at buying a Unisys box, at that time it was Burroughs, a Burroughs computer, and they need the software. So I said, certainly. Of course, I called my husband. I was so excited. I said, hey, I've got to go to, you know, Japan. And I got my passport, everything ready. And then my boss calls me in again. And I could see he was really kind of red-faced. And he said, you know, they found out that you are a woman. And a woman cannot address a business meeting in Japan.
Wow.
You see, my name is Dagnija, Dagnija. And they thought, well, you know, so that was kind of a story. But the interesting thing is, I ended up meeting them anyway. My boss had arranged, he called me later and he said, you know, Daggy, you really won because they needed to talk to you. They're coming to the Getty Estate in Los Angeles area to meet you, and I've arranged to get the company plane to take you there. So here I was in a private jet, you know, a kid in the 20s, and the salesman and I, the only people plus pilot, and we go arrive in at the estate, and these two little Japanese guys brought up to me, bowing and handing me these two little boxes. And on the plane back that day, I opened them up and they were gorgeous pearls. I guess they were kind of embarrassed that they couldn't see me in Japan. I forgave them. So that was my little woman story.
Oh, amazing. Absolutely amazing.
My job went on.
Sorry, I just want to pick up on a few bits you said there. Before you went to Japan, when you were working in the company and you were the only woman there, you said that you didn't mind, which is great. Does that mean that the men didn't mind either? Did they treat you well? Did they respect you?
Yes, actually, you know, people keep asking me that question. It was just they used to call me Daggy and the boys when we had meetings, even when I became VP. But it was just natural. No, everybody in the early days was very helpful. In Indianapolis, when I first started, I didn't know much about computers at all because I had taken theoretical math. And there were like 9 of us, and the guys really helped me. They got me started and helped me figure out what was what and explain things about the computing to me. So, and it's always been a team, and I've been fortunate that I've really had good support for my gentleman team, and I really never had any issues.
Oh, that's really great to hear, because so often we hear negative stories in these types of situations. So it's really nice to hear that you had a positive experience.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with everything I had was merit-based. I was then promoted to manager of scientific programming, manager of commercial business systems. And then actually actually, it was a great change for me to be offered a sales position. A vice president called me in and said, Daggy, we, for the state of Michigan, we would like to have a branch, a sales branch that focuses on public schools and universities. So the job would be to staff the branch with salespeople and try to get as many users as possible in schools. And I thought to myself, my first reaction was horrible because I had never liked salesmen and I knew nothing about sales. So I went home, talked to my husband, and he said, hey, why didn't you try it? You know, what could it hurt? Try it and see what happens. And I did that. And you know what? We were so successful in getting some school accounts. It was the most fun job, I think, of all the jobs I've had. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, wonderful. And then I went on from there. I want to ask you about how things changed and went in a different direction in 1990 when during a lunch in Washington, you were introduced to the Prime Minister and Foreign Minister of Latvia and yes. Things went from there.
Yes. Well, at that point, you see, I was vice president and the chairman, the company chairman, then it was the company Burroughs merged with another company called Sperry. So together they came and the name changed from Burroughs to Unisys. So at that time, the Unisys chairman basically asked that I represent him at a luncheon that he knew I was Latvian and he couldn't attend. It was in Washington, D.C. So I said yes, and I flew to Washington for the luncheon. And when I arrived, I, of course, put my name tag on with my full name, D-A-G-N-I-J-A, Dagny Alasis. And I went in, and very soon the prime minister comes up to me, and he basically asked me in Latvian, do you speak Latvian? I said, yes, I do. He said, well, could you sit close to the podium, because this is the first time that I have given an address in English to a larger English audience. Mm-hmm. And in case I have some words I've forgotten, I'd like your help. I said, certainly. So that started it all. I sat at the table next to the podium, and I was next to the foreign minister. And so in talking to him, I said, well, what kind of computers do you have in Latvia? And he said, well, I know nothing about computers, actually. But he said, all I can tell you, in my foreign ministry, all we have are these big typewriters. And I said, oh, my goodness. In the States, at that point, we were using workstations that are networked and so forth. I was telling him about that. He said, well, can you get me some? And I thought, well, I said, I could ask for a grant. I wasn't so sure I really wanted to do that because I wasn't convinced that communism was done in Latvia because I'd had a kind of a strange trip in 78 with my husband and his father. And I just didn't like the environment. And I was kind of reluctant. But then I thought, well, you know, you got to do it because I was in position to do it. So I did do it. They gave me the grant. And this was now September of this luncheon. And that December, my colleague and I actually delivered these workstations to the foreign ministry in Riga, Latvia. And then actually there I was quite surprised because I was surprised how smart the people were. When we got there, we had two college students helping. But basically, they were supposed to set up the workstations at the local area network. And it turned out that there was a major cable missing that was absolutely needed to hook up these workstations. And I thought to myself, well, hey, you know, that's it. We're not going to be able to demonstrate the working, you know, network as we had planned. But what happened was one of the students said, he said, hey, don't worry. I'm going to go to the university, and tomorrow morning we'll have a cable. And I told my colleague, Ed Hayes, dream on, you know, how is this kid going to be able to do a create a Unisys cable? But you know what? He did it. The next day, there was a cable, and it worked. All the workstations were networked, and we were able to proceed. So, yeah, so that was a very surprising trip for me in terms of seeing how creative the Latvians were. And so that was interesting. So, yeah, and then at that point, basically, I decided I was going to start a company for Latvia, in Latvia, where my husband's cousin was going to be the director, and my thought was we would just bring technology and train the students on the new hires on the technology, and they would be the programming services in Latvia. And so that's how it started.
And that was the Baltic Technology Group.
Yes, that was the Baltic Technology Group. So, yeah. And so from then on, I made many, many trips over there because I actually was, and they told me afterward, the first Western visitor to arrive in Latvia. And the government didn't know an official visitor because we were delivering the workstations, and they didn't know the protocol. So they were kind of, so I found out this later, but anyway, yeah. So being one of the very first Western people there and speaking Latvian, I was just besieged with, every time I went, everybody wanted appointments, and they wanted, to know about this and that, and how does this work? How does that work in the West? Everyone had some ideas. It was just nonstop. Very interesting. And I felt like I needed to deliver these proposals. So I spent an awful lot of time finding experts, for example, in transportation, where we ended up giving Latvia a proposal where they would, basically use the modern technology, where, for example, when a cargo ship, let's say, comes in, there's one document, basically a business document. The format, I think, is EDI, which is the electronic data interchange format that's used worldwide. And that we needed to start using that. And this meant that when, let's say, a cargo ship comes in, you create this information once in this document, and then that's all you need. All the other accounting departments in the shipping company, that information would flow through, and the cargo ship would be on its way much faster than the way they were doing it when I got there. Things like that. And I guess the most important one I realized right away, because when I started Baltic Technology Group, I needed to pay them, and they chose to be paid in dollars. Well, there was no bank that would interact with Latvia, because Latvia couldn't at that point do any communications outside of Latvia. And I realized right away that they needed something called SWIFT, which is basically a group of banks that had this organization in Belgium, in Brussels area, where they basically, everyone used them to get outside their country. In other words, Latvia needed to go through the SWIFT organization to send their information to the U.S. or any other country. So they needed to become a member of SWIFT. So I remember, I realized that in 91, and I had took a trip there. They saw me because they were also a client of Unisys. That was my company. And I was a VP, so therefore, basically, I think that helped me get the appointment. And this gentleman who was in charge of getting new members was very kind. He saw me, and he said, well, he said, Mrs. Laces, there's been no one from the former Soviet Union yet asking for an appointment. And yes, they do need to become SWIFT members. You're the first one. And yes, I will commit to come to Latvia first. And so three months later, my husband and I met him in Riga. So that's how I think that particular connection was the one I'm most proud of, because Latvia got to deal with the West before the other countries.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing.
So that was one of my, one of the trips I thought was.
Yeah.
That one.
I just think it's really impressive, all these different things that have happened that you've come across that when you were in Latvia, realizing, oh, they didn't have this system in place. So you made sure the system was in place or created something so they were able to move forward. I mean, that's amazing. You must be very proud of everything you've achieved.
Well, yes, actually I was. I think I showed them the way, how the West works in the key areas, and I showed it very quickly. I wrote the book because I wanted people to see that that life is always full of obstacles. You have a goal and there's an obstacle. Too many people quit too early. And an example of one, for example, my plan for Latvia was to use Baltic Technology Group to develop these local systems. However, Latvia at that time, you see, wasn't quite ready to implement everything. So the way I wanted to, I needed to pay the people. And I was so therefore, I thought out of the box and I went to my U.S. colleagues, my clients in the U.S. that were using the same technology that I trained our new hires at Baltic Technology Group. And it turns out that they always needed some help, some additional help for 2-3 months and so forth. And the team in Latvia wanted to see America. So basically we started to work on projects outside of Latvia. And we were very successful, greatly in demand. And then, because the people were really smart, they were very dedicated. They always wanted to do a good job. And then when they tired, and this was before the internet, this was before the high-speed internet, they wanted to work remotely. So what I had to do, for example, we had to install a leased line into the Baltic Technology Group from the Unisys organization, so our programmers could work, and it worked, but it was expensive. Of course, the VPN, the internet came very soon, World Wide Web, and everything was more normal. But those were the early days. Yeah, people should, you know, I've seen so many young people these days give up. They keep switching jobs. They say, "Oh, this is, I can't do this," or "I don't really like the environment. I don't like my manager," and they just go jump ship and do something else. But that's, you shouldn't do that, because that, you know, people, if there's a goal and it's a worthwhile goal, there are other paths to get there.
Yeah.
And there are always obstacles in any job, in any profession. But my book talks about all these things I'm telling you. I've had obstacles and impediments along the way. But the thing is, you got to keep going. And I think that's the whole point of life. There are good people and bad people, but you've got to stick with it and not give up.
Yeah.
There's always a path forward. Always a path forward.
Definitely. Oh, it's a great message. And are you still working now, or have you retired?
Well, basically, I'm involved. I keep track of what's going on. But our son, daughter, and their Latvian management, they're just doing fine.
Wonderful. Well, if people want to get a copy of the book, it's called The Wall Falls, A Woman Rises, a memoir, how a U.S. tech entrepreneur broke the glass ceiling and helped modernize Latvia. It's available on our website, tre.radio, and it's by Dagi Lasis, who we've been chatting with today. Dagi, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great to chat with you.
Thank you, Hannah. I've enjoyed it.
Talk Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.